And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hi there, my little plague rats. You've caught me at the office at my new company. It's a film production house called Public Domain Pictures. The studio that was formed with a used iPhone, $500, and a dream. We've already churned out 4 movies in the last 2 months. You might have heard of some of them, like Winnie the Pooh versus Fentanyl Bear, Popeye the Porno, and its companion piece, The Olive Oil Orgy. Night of the Living Dead with an all-midget cast. And we even scored a celebrity guest for The Wonderful Wizard of Dr. Oz. Well, we were having a little meeting where we wanted to make a Dracula. And then, due to the success of the new Nosferatu movie, we said, Nosferatu's public domain, why don't we churn out a few of those? So I'm down here writing up a few spec scripts. I got a stack of them here. You want to hear? We got Nosferatu 2, The Shadowing. Nosferatu's Christmas in Hawaii, which will be a TV special with musical guests and dancing. Nosferatu in Oz, Rats versus Flying Monkeys, with a not exactly green witch. We've got a short film, Boxcar Willie, the Captain of the Demeter. Orlok versus Pooh, the Poison Honey. This is my favorite, the Nosferatu Crew. It's an animated show with kid detectives and their good friend Nosferatu. And a modern sequel, Nosferatu AD 1974. Saves us a lot of money by avoiding the Dracula IP. What? Oh. I'm just being told that Dracula is public domain. Well, I gotta go. I got a little bit of writing to do. Enjoy the movie.
Everyone, and welcome to the Startling Vault of Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your hosts, Jason Jacknetti, and I am joined by the usual cohorts here. The hair metal hero, Chris Tyler.
There is a devil in this world, and I have met him.
And then we have two true freaks, OG Chris Honeywell.
I am an appetite. Nothing more.
Oh boy. And of course my brother Luke Giacchinetti.
I have seen things in this world that would make have made Isaac Newton crawl back into his mother's womb.
Oh, that was a good one. Yes.
Every line out of Willem Dafoe's mouth was a good one.
Well, there were a lot of I call them Loomis lines.
Yes.
There were a lot of Loomis lines in this one.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe in this movie is channeling. He's channeling Dr. Loomis. He's channeling Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing. He is channeling all of those guys.
All of them. I was getting a lot of the
psychiatrist at the end of Psycho.
Yes, all of, he's everybody. He's like everybody. So if you couldn't tell by the way we were our quotes, folks, that I don't know where you've been, but we are talking about Nosferatu. He's Italian.
He's Italian?
He's Italian every single time. Every time. So here's the thing. So on we have a Google TV. That's our smart TV, right? And so it runs to Google TV OS. And so this has been on the front page of the Google TV OS for weeks. And every time I turn the TV on, it's like, he's Italian every single time. Sometimes it's me. Sometimes it's one of the kids, but it's every single time without fail.
Yeah. It's pretty funny, though. So we're talking about the new Nosferatu. We had all, obviously, when this had first dropped, the trailers look good. And it's Robert Eggers. For those of you who don't know, he did The Northman. He did The Lighthouse. He did The Witch. Is it right? The Witch, right? Yes. So his movies are very polarizing. That's probably the best way to say it. A lot of people think he is an absolute genius, and a lot of people think that he makes the worst crap they've ever seen, which is really, nowadays, like we've said here, is that a lot of people feel that every single movie has to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, or it's absolute garbage. And the problem is, most of life lives in the middle. Most of life does not live on the extrema of life. And when you watch his movies, and I'm a fan of Robert Eggers, I just want to make sure if you guys didn't gather that already. His movies are 100% not for everyone. They are not made for the general audience, everybody kind of thing. The Northman might be the most commercial film he had made up to this time by way of like most, that movie is not even very accessible to everybody, but it's not like The Lighthouse. Good God.
No, most not for anyone movie that he's done. I think Nosferatu almost is like sort of his most accessible.
Before this, The Northman, the one that was the most commercial. And the thing is, Dad had said to me when he saw The Northman, he goes, that was good, but man, people are going to hate it. Like when Dad knows that people are going to hate it, like, because Dad doesn't like everything. Let's be honest. My dad is very open about his opinion. And
aren't we all?
No. But some people are.
I was on the phone with my dad earlier today, and he told me that he thought The Substance was terrible. Wicked was terrible.
Yep.
He went down the line. It's like, I don't think he's watched a movie he's liked in some time, apparently. So it's like, well, hey, those are certainly valid takes.
I like them already.
Here's what he said to me. He flat out, because I was there Saturday, right? He flat out said to me, he goes, I go, Dad, did you watch The Substance? He goes, oh, I hated it. I'm like, really, Dad? He just didn't like it.
And what's that movie review site that you can go to and have your own account? Letterboxd, that you get these guys some Letterboxd accounts can all keep up with them. I would love to read your dad's trashing every movie that came out. That's the only reason I got a Letterboxd account. I would take the most beloved movies and just write 1-star reviews of them sometimes, as if I hadn't watched them.
What do you like, Carrie's dad from King of Queens?
Yeah. I can say this is that if Dad could actually still, use a computer and do all that stuff like that right now, he would definitely be on there just letting people, because he'll tell you right to your face. So it's not like Dad ever hides any of his feelings of things. But he goes, I said, well, and Mom said that we watched Wicked. Mom called it The Wiz at first. And I was like,
That's a very different movie.
Right? I was like, as much as I may or may not have liked Wicked, it was not The Wiz. And Dad goes, it was boring. And he goes, for $110 million, and you can't remember one goddamn thing about it. And I'm like, that's true, Dad. I did feel the movie was at least half an hour too long, but that was a good... you got to appreciate my dad's honest take. He also felt Gladiator 2 only had three scenes that were worth his time. I was like, okay, because he goes, don't buy it for me. I'm like, I wasn't. But anyway, so he has not seen Nosferatu yet. So, and I said to him, and I'm going to be very honest here. I said flat out to him, I said, Dad, because it's hard. Dad has to like angle himself so he can see and the whole everything, right? I said, I don't know if you're going to like this movie. I said, I can tell you this. The costumes are amazing. It's filmed beautifully. I said, everything about this movie is gorgeous. I said, but you are probably going to find it boring because like every other fucking Nosferatu ever made, it at its core is not a fast paced movie. It's a slow plotting kind of just going along and again, whether people agree or not, it's fine. This probably is to me the best Nosferatu that's been made because the original, it's what it is, but it's again, it's a schlock to get through it, kind of thing. The Werner Herzog one, good God, I know some people love that movie, but good God, is it slow, right?
It's definitely its own thing. It's a Werner Herzog movie.
That's what I'm saying, but that's it, but it's okay, and this is what this movie is too. The hard part about this is that, like, as much as I like this movie, it's not that I don't like the new Nosferatu, but this is not for people who are going to, like, this is not like you're going to sit down and like, oh, I'm going to watch this and whatever. Like, you're not going to, you have to decide to sit down and watch this. This isn't a jump into kind of movie. It doesn't have a big hook unless you really are into whatever's happening. The problem is, and this I think is, one of the main reasons why I don't like the whole overall Nosferatu story or like in any of the movies or even, and I'm not a huge fan of Dracula, except for horror Dracula, there is no straight up Dracula telling that I actually like.
It's funny that you mentioned horror of Dracula. Okay. Because to me, that's the film that this film reminded me the most of. Yeah. Right. Is that obviously the story is Nosferatu, but just, I guess the way that it's blocked out a lot of, you know, I mean, it's in Germany, but everyone has an English accent for reasons.
Yeah. It's, right? It's just taking Dracula. It's just going, fuck it. It was a copyright nightmare. Anyway, everything's public domain now. It's both of them. You could talk about this movie and it would be easier for me as far as characters to go like, well, there was Van Helsing and, you know, Mina and.
Yeah, but that's part and parcel with Nosferatu. But this version of it, just to me, it reminded me of all the world we watched. What is it? The Woman in Black? Mm-hmm. Did we watch that modern Hammer film?
Yeah.
It looks like if that Hammer, that modern revived Hammer that never got quite obviously as voluminous as its predecessor. If they made a Nosferatu, it would look like this, right?
Yeah.
So just to me, it's like a modern Hammer take of a vampire movie. And it's like, yeah, I can get behind that because Jay, you said it. It's a plotting. He's not slow. He's methodical, right? That's we're wrestling fans. That's what we say. So that, but that's it's a Hammer movie, you know. Hammer movies are methodical.
And it's also like a combination of like fancy digs and gritty, grotty locations.
Yeah.
You know,
it's doing the, we're going to be as classy as we possibly can be with all this, but we're going to hit the Grand Guignol right when it needs to be there.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's another, you know, both Chris and Chris, you both make great points. That's another kind of Hammer thing because in Hammer, you often had the Edwardian sort of sets, right? The very well decorated and designed sets and costumes, but then inevitably you'd also have the peasantry, right? Yeah. Whether it was in London and it was the Skogs on the street, or if it was in Bavaria and it was the illiterate village folk or whatever, you had both sides of that typically in a Hammer film, right? So that, and again, that this one does a good job of that. The costumes in this alone. All these dresses and all these fancy coats and everything that people are wearing in this, it just screams Hammer horror to me.
Yeah.
And like I said, everybody's British, despite the fact that we're in Germany and Transylvania. But, you know. So it's I agree. It's taking it, and it's like air quotes up to the mic, modernize it. But can you really modernize such a piece that is such of its period that it's set in? You know?
No, I mean the dialogue is. I mean that is spot on for the time. That's exactly what Victorian era Brits, Europeans, they would be speaking like. And I gotta stop for a second. The acting in this is fucking unbelievable. Everybody's fucking killing it. That kid who played Quicksilver, I didn't even realize that was him until goddamn near the end.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out who he was. I'm like, he's familiar to me.
He's a guy from Godzilla.
Modern.
It's Aaron Taylor Johnson. You'll have to excuse me. I like trolling people with that because they're like, oh, he's Quicksilver. I'm like, you mean he's Brody from Godzilla? And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah. but I'm just that Godzilla guy, right?
That's all right. That's why we love you.
I'm saying I had a Two True Freaks listener tell me that many, many years ago. It's like nobody cares. You're just that Godzilla guy. I'm like, oh, okay, thank you.
That's all I am to you. Fuck
it's
you,
all
buddy.
I am to you. It's like, you know.
Well, I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, oh, that's Beast, and he's going to be playing Lex Luthor. Oh, that's it's the Green Goblin. And then it took me forever to realize that was Quicksilver. Oh, and that was the evil Charles Xavier from Deadpool and Wolverine.
Well, this one's going to rank high with me.
I was going to say, Jay, you know, the only thing I could think of when Willem Dafoe shows up, you'll like this, was, it was a firefight!
Yes! All like
I love Boondock Saints.
Yeah, there's not a character in here that this is the first time I've seen, because it hits all, it's got all the tropes in it of a lot of different things. It's got little bits that reminded me of the Francis Ford Coppola.
Yes, 100%.
Real quick, Chris. When I started watching, because I watched it the second time. This is the second time I watched this today. I was supposed to watch for Kelly, but she was home. When I first started watching this, I'm like 15 minutes in, and I said, did I put on Bram Stoker's Dracula? Like, this is a lot. There's a lot of Bram Stoker's Dracula in this movie.
They took the best stuff from that in terms of the atmosphere and the vibe.
You can feel it, like, it's there. And the problem is, and I know you're not supposed to say this, I don't like Bram Stoker's Dracula. I love
parts of it.
I like the bat version when he turns into the bat monster. I like the werewolf.
Yeah.
I like him as the knight. I like him as the old man. So that's what I said. They're all makeups. All the other stuff in that movie. It's fine if it's not that. I just don't like that movie, and I know you're supposed to like that movie. That's the movie you're supposed to like, kind of thing. But I don't, and that's the problem. As I'm watching Nosferatu and I'm seeing all this, I'm like, oh boy, don't tell me. But I like Nosferatu more than I like Bram Stoker's Dracula, which you're not supposed to.
Like, I would agree with you on that.
Well, I think this is the first one of Dracula or Nosferatu retellings of all the tropes where all the characters are good and relatable and you get invested in them, because most of them, they're only going to develop Dracula, maybe Lucy or Mina, or, you know, a little, but not really usually them. It's usually Dracula and Van Helsing, or whoever the Van Helsing character are totally interesting. And everybody else is just sort of like
there.
And like some, like in Bram Stoker's Dracula, you know, Jonathan Harker was extra there. Just like, it's like, okay, this guy, you know, and it's like, that's his character. He's a schlub or whatever.
And Thomas in this was not.
No.
The second he starts thinking something's wrong, he's ready to act.
Well, it's like it reminds me of the. It has a lot of the book in it too, the actual Bram Stoker book, and every character is just, you know, even if they're in like his their friend that they were staying with, he was just introduced as sort of like a type, and stuff. But as it went on, you know, you were picking up more about, you know, how he was relating to them and reacting to them. And then when he breaks down at the end, it's fucking grueling. It's great. You know, it's the first one that has a fully invested cast in it I've ever seen.
I was genuinely upset for everybody in this, even the Renfield. Yes. I'm like, this poor bastard.
Hey, and it's not afraid to kill kids.
Nope.
Well, see, okay, so this is the point where, you know, Hero and I know we diverge, right? And I'm not. This is not a criticism of Hero. This is just its personal take, yep. Right? When full spoilers on, when Orlok kills the two daughters, I became physically angry.
Yes, you should.
Yeah. As I should, because I have two daughters.
Yeah.
Okay. And it got to the point that it actively pissed me off. But then as I'm thinking about it, I was like, well, that's the desired effect, right? Yep. And I said this to my wife. We were talking about this today, and I said, it's definitely not a sexy vampire movie.
No.
Right? He's a full-on beast. But at the there's same time, there's a ton there sex is like the main driver of the story.
It's the only thing that stops them.
I think they could have titled this Nosferatu. Or how's a lady supposed to get a fucking orgasm in the 19th century
in Victorian Germany, right?
Yeah.
But it's like over on a show that I'm a big fan of, The Grind Bin, right? Way back, the Pom Pom Girls, I think, where they stop the other team from being able to play by sending the cheerleaders over there to fuck them out, right? So they'll be all fucked out. Go to the game. That's essentially what this is, right? That's how they stop Orlok. They fuck them out.
Yeah. Women, weak and legs.
I can't argue with that.
Vampire that we've had on screen, I'd say since probably Bram Stoker's Dracula, although I guess we just had a remake of Salem's Lot, right? So that's still pretty monstrous, but an extremely, especially for modern post Twilight, post Anne Rice vampire that is a full on like a fucking monster from, you know, from Vampire the Masquerade type of thing, right?
The vampire that is decrepit and decaying and reeks and is
has
just
maggots, yeah.
Yeah.
And they literally beat him by fucking him out. So it's like, of course, because we've talked about this, whether your vampire is sexy or not, the vampire is an inherently predatory sexual creature.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And here, where it's like, I mean, you want to talk about being uncomfortable watching a movie, okay? When he's got Thomas pinned down and is drinking the blood out of his heart, yep. It's like, I was like, okay, you know, I think of myself as pretty hard-boiled. Nothing much really. This is a little awkward.
This is pretty disturbing, right? Yeah.
You know? Well, the framing of it is, I mean, it's the framing is everything. Like, it's every time he drains somebody, it's presented like a rape. Like, it's just what it is.
Yeah. Well, you know? He just gives him a little peck on the neck and then it's just straight to like, it's not this like, I'll just have a little straw full of blood here. It's just like rip open the heart and just drooling, oozing, gushing, is slurping. Messy, it's making noises like a dog, just like
that's one of the great things about a vampire, right? Is that you can have that, or you can have the goblets of blood, like in which is that Vault of Horror or Tales from the Crypt? I don't remember which Amicus movie they have that where they have the guy who's always getting tapped for the drinks, right?
Yeah.
Or if you prefer, you know, Castlevania, you know, Symphony of the Night at the beginning.
Without what is a man? Right?
Vault of Horror. That's the first scene in Vault of Horror. Yeah. Tales from the Crypt, I can tell you that.
Well, thing that I was really struck by, I did like how they did finally reveal Orlok. They kept him in the shadows so much, which was fucking brilliant. I was honestly surprised at the visual interpretation. I was expecting the more feral bat-like makeup. I was not expecting how subdued,
especially the way they hyped it up.
Well, I mean, they did
the whole, like, you know, we'd rather not have people don't tell anybody what he's gonna look like, and he looked like a rotting nobleman. corrupted nobleman.
Yeah, I mean, like the head shape was kind of like the previous versions and the Salem's Lot version, but it was still it was more human than I had expected it to be, until he's, you know, stripped down and you see how just gaunt and.
Did he even have fangs?
Yes. When you, at the end, when he spoilers, when, you know, the sunlight's killing him and he's been fucked out. Yeah, you can see that there's fangs.
Yeah. But usually the fangs are like, just like half the, you know, like they're a character in a Dracula movie, you know, like,
well, the,
and this one models, was just making him more like a feral beast, basically. Well,
I mean, the Lugosi model that popularized, yeah, just the you know, the little prongs on the his, you know, his accent, the canines, man, on the up and down. But
I've never heard more L's rolled in my life than this movie. Just like, yeah, deep L rolls.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Zangief is watching this movie like, tone it down, comrade.
His voice, but like that, you, when you have an actor that can do voices like that, go for it, I say, because I just love that overblown. And the doctor, the guy who is the you know, the madhouse doctor,
yeah,
he had,
you know,
like,
you know what
a
his
classic
next role is?
Rich, just rich,
that,
old
that guy
movie
is doing,
voice.
That guy's doing the voice of Galactus.
Is he? Yes.
Wow.
And excellent. I'm like, that's fucking perfect. Excellent. I believe that motherfucker's going to eat the world.
He's the new James Earl Jones.
And I got to do one more comic book thing. The bailiff, or whoever the assistant was at the Nut House, that's comic accurate Wolverine right there. Dude was about 5'5", hairy.
Yeah.
I literally leaned over to Mari and I'm like, there's Wolverine right there.
Well, the Dr. Nock, the Renfield character in this, is basically Donald Pleasant, is very Donald Pleasance also.
Oh, yeah, he was. Marion had no intention of sitting and watching this with me, but then she saw that, oh, it's a period piece, and she saw the makeup, and she saw, like, all the dresses and everything, so she kind of got sucked in. When he pulls, goes full Ozzy Osbourne, she jumped back. I'm like, well, it's their version of Renfield. He eats Renfield spiders, and then even before he said it, I said, the blood is the life, and then he said it.
We're about to hop on the crazy train.
Yep.
Going off the rails.
Yeah, he was, surprisingly, by the end of that, he was well aware of what he was and was just like, yep, take me out. I was, everything about this just hit me the right fucking way.
Yeah.
But I like gothic horror, and I know it's not for everybody.
I could have watched this for 4 hours if it was just somebody, a cameraman walking through the town and just filming things as they go on. It was, like, when people were like, it was slow. And also, like, all the beats is, for the most part, if you've seen any kind of vampire movies, you know, especially anything in the Dracula, Nosferatu vein,
you know all the
places where they're going and stuff. You don't know how it's going to exactly play out, but there's beats that you hit. And the way he hit all the beats was just fucking, I never felt bored for a second.
But there was enough kind of twists, like with Anna, what's the, I can't remember her name now. The Mina character.
Yeah.
Her having the connection to him from when she was a child, that's new. Like, and her being off her rocker already from the beginning because of that. And you don't really fully understand it until the end. It was just like, that was a nice little bit of changing it up. Like, I was not expecting that. Cause, like, I'm sitting there watching, I'm like, yeah, they're hitting all the beats. They're hitting all the beats. And then there's just enough little twists in it where it was its own thing. Like, every
the only thing they really seemed to, like, really avoid was, you know, the creation of other vampires, having like vampire minions.
They didn't do the brides.
The closest thing was the gypsies killing the person in the coffin. And
I was expecting the brides when Thomas ran out, and it's like, oh, I guess they're not doing that. Okay, nope. Yeah. He's doing full on.
Or Mina becoming
the horror
of Dracula. Lady.
I'm going to go kill this guy.
Yeah. Or Mina, the Mina character becoming a vampire and stuff like that. And they're just like, yeah, no, we're not doing it. It's not about that.
Well, the thing is,
the plague was more of a thing than a plague of vampires. That the literal rat plague was.
Well, you know, we're also. I don't mean to interrupt you, Jay. I'll let you make your point in a second. But the thing about the plague that I figured is like, okay, it's a post-COVID world that we're living in.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. When they start talking about quarantining the city, and he's like, "Well, I'm going to leave." It's like, "Well, you can't leave because you're under quarantine and all that." It's like, okay, that is something that an audience now. We're already programmed to understand all that.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's even scarier because you realize that you know, when you see that, you know, they're like, you know, well, we know what was going on with her character, but it looks like mental illness, and they're all just like, oh, don't worry about it. Or you can just chain her up if you have to, you know, and stuff like that.
It's the guy who left academia for alchemy is the only one who's got a clear idea of what's going on.
Yeah, and this plague was like COVID on crack, and you were in a society that was, you know, as ill-equipped as ours was to psychologically and whatever to deal with it. This society, it was just like, you were in a death trap basically.
Friedrich is just totally unable to accept it's anything other than it's a plague ship and these rats and that's what did it. So it's
those scenes were great because you could just see him just boiling, like when she confronts him and is just like, you know, this isn't rats and stuff. And he's just like, he just wants to throw her out the window. And he's such a trained gentleman of the time that he's got to be just like, shh. And you can just feel the seethe of it. And that was the point in that point in the movie. I was just like, damn, man, I've never seen such well-developed characters in one of these movies. It's just, it's awesome. There's plenty of room for all of them, it turns out.
Yeah.
The odd thing for me, oh, I'm sorry, Jay, go ahead. I've interrupted you twice. Go ahead.
No, it's cool. Just go. Just finish your thought. Yeah, it's okay.
Well, so this is a total tangent. The thing for me that was interesting about watching this is that in the past calendar year, right? So between from March to March, as we're recording this, okay, I've managed to read Salem's Lot by Stephen King, because I started that when Hurricane Helene hit.
Ooh.
Okay. So we didn't have power. So you don't got much to do. So you read, right? And so that was, I have it on paperback. I have a paperback, a coverless paperback. So I had a stripped copy of it that is being held together by about two rolls of scotch.
That's how it should be. That's how it should be.
Right. So I read Salem's Lot. We had the new Salem's Lot be released, right? Okay. I just recently finished a book called Midnight by Dean Koontz. Now, this is not a vampire book, but if you ever get a chance to read this book, this is Dean Koontz writing Salem's Lot, right down to it's a guy, a guy comes into a town. There's some weird stuff going on in the town. He meets up with a woman. They meet up with a kid. They have an ally who cannot easily move. Right. The town is slowly seemingly going crazy and everybody is being infected by what's going on in the town. And it all ends in this big climax. It's very much Salem's Lot, except it has nothing to do with the supernatural. Right. It's like a science fiction sort of take on Salem's Lot. And then we just watched this Nosferatu. So it's like it's amazing the type of mileage you can get out of essentially the same story.
Yeah.
Right. And just rejiggering it, moving the deck chairs around a little bit, and then focusing on different aspects of it. Right. King, being King, writes about all the little stories of all the characters in the small town, because that's what fascinates King, right? Is the lives of small town folk in their small town. Koontz does that also, but Koontz is also a guy that all his stuff, even when it's sort of supernatural, it's also sort of technological. So there's long passages detailing about data networks and, you know, how they were able to affect this change in people and how
the Michael Crichton Michael Crichton and
Stephen King, it's more of a it leans more on the techno side, but the way that he writes characters is very King-esque. I mean, Koontz has been described that way for a long time. Koontz is also much more prolific, I think, than King, but that's a separate issue. And whereas here, again, we're taking a story that is itself borrowing elements heavily from Bram Stoker and then telling it in a new way and putting the emphasis on different parts. And like you said about the connection from when she was a child, adding new elements to tell it in a different way, right? I had a whole discussion. We were talking about this on our group chat earlier about taking certain both legitimate and fan-based media organizations will look at taking either generic thematic elements or perhaps public domain story elements, and depending on how they use them, we'll either call them art or look down their nose at it, right? Where it I'll come right out and say it. The context being that I was today years old when I learned that the producers of Wicked are able to get away with their Wicked Witch being green because it's a different shade than MGM used. Okay. I call bullshit on that. That is tiptoeing up to the line of copyright infringement and spitting on it. That's what that is, as far as I'm concerned. Now, you're going to say, Luke, the wonderful Wizard of Oz is public domain. Yes, it is. In Frank L. Baum's book, they don't talk about the skin tone of the Wicked Witch, right? So making her green is only there to stand on what MGM did, right? But Wicked is called art, right? But, you know, oh, Pooh, Blood and Honey, Popeye the Slayer Man, all those other horror movies that use the public domain characters, those are called trash. I'll be honest with you. The horror movies are honest about it, at least. Right? They're wearing it on their sleeve. They're not like, well, you know, sort of. They're not hiding behind their fucking lawyers. Okay. Whereas here it's like you've infringed on MGM by making her green, but you changed the Pantone code by one number so that she's not the same green as she was in the movie. Screw you, Wicked.
Well, now,
okay.
Now,
first off,
now
I
it's,
mean,
now
I'm,
it's Amazon I'm, though.
What's that?
Jeff Bezos just bought MGM too.
I know, but it's still infringement because it's, you know,
oh, with, yeah. With
it, I mean, because it's like, I'm sorry, you didn't. I mean, you're literally taking what MGM did. You're literally creating marketplace confusion, which is the whole point of
it's
doing
important
this. You know,
Wicked, especially in the movie sense, you know, you can tell it's meant to be to echo back to the movie because that's what everybody knows. That's what the bread and butter. Like in the book, it didn't have to be. It was basically just all reference to the L. Frank Baum stuff, and it was,
and it was
a serious thing. And then I'm sure the visual look of the theatrical production of it too was very, you know, meant to my roommate. Well, no, actually, she just worked. She didn't do Wicked. She did The Wiz, just recently. But she's done Wicked before.
We're not talking about The Wiz. I mean Wicked, right? So.
But yeah, but it's the same. But you know,
The
Wiz could get away with it because it was a very, you know, right. It was almost satire. Almost they could almost claim satire.
The Wiz to me is the perfect example, right? Because it takes The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, which is in the public domain, and does it in a different way,
right?
Without infringing on MGM.
Right.
It's the same. Jay knows exactly where I'm going next. You can make a Frankenstein movie. You can make them till the cows come home, but you better not make it look like Boris Karloff or Glenn Strange.
That's right.
I don't think the flying monkeys were actually also in the L. Frank Baum books.
I don't recall because they show up in enough derivative works that I think they might have been. I don't know if they're in The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, but I think they were in one of them because they show up in a lot of stuff.
Okay.
Which means, you know. And
so
that's
how they got away
with
that. Okay, yeah.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Because I got Nosferatu stuff to talk about. But if when the monkeys went out the window, if they all just fell to their death, that'd be funny as hell.
That would be hilarious.
That's the
it's like, oh man, monkeys don't fly. It's like a Freakazoid when he drives a Freakmobile off the cliff into the water, and he's just calmly flipping switches. And it just sinks. And he's like, oh, wait, this vehicle wasn't designed for underwater travel. That was important. I forgot that.
It would be just like a Family Guy cutaway, double cutaway, where they go, it's just like that episode of Alice, and then it cuts to Flo, and Flo goes, when monkeys fly, and then it cuts to the monkeys at the window jumping out and, like, just pummeling to their death.
Yes, yes.
While Les Nessman reports it.
Yeah.
They're monkeys. Anyway, so... My point is we talked about this many years ago also with the Colorado Space. If you're going to use public domain material, there's a gold mine of good stuff there. Just make sure you don't infringe on stuff that's not right in the public domain when you do it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So the 2 points I wanted to make, one of them was, so the idea that as when she's younger, that she calls out and invites darkness into herself. Like, even though she's supposed to be this vessel and all this other stuff, that's like, because Willem Dafoe's character says it, in another time, you'd be a high priest of Isis, and here you're just looked upon as, like, you're going to be our savior, but they would look upon her really as a witch. I mean, that's really what they would, they didn't come out and say it, but that's what they're considering her to be, as a witch.
Vessel of evil, yes.
Right, exactly. So I like that, the idea that she invited in, but by her inviting the darkness in, she brought all this upon, that she has carried this with her, and she has brought this upon these people who have not done anything to warrant this, which is an interesting take, I think, compared to what we had in previous versions.
It's her biker ex-boyfriend is making everybody's life hell.
So this is the point I wanted to make about the plague. So in 2023, The Last Voyage of the Detmer, which I really enjoyed, and Dad actually loved that movie too, because it's as close to 30 Days a Night as you can get and still be Dracula, right, kind of thing, because that's what it is. It's basically 30 Days a Night on a boat, but with one vampire. So the whole thing
is like that's like when you go to, like, that's like the note that's passed you on a cocktail napkin.
Yeah.
It's like you're making 30 Days a Night, and the bruce just slides a cocktail and it says, put it on a boat.
And underneath it, underlined, it says, and it's public domain.
Yeah. Well, is that, like, because when they're on the boat, and that's the whole point, is that when the Detmer is going to crash, you know, or arrive, they're trying to kill the vampire and whatever, unless the whole, like, you know, movie's been out for a year and a half, almost 2 years. So the beginning of the movie is when the idea of the wolf leaving is Dracula getting to the city. So there is a way to make a sequel to it. But, like, the whole point was that the whole boat's going to be, you know, we all know what's happening on the voyage of the Detmer. It's going to kill everyone. That's what's going to be happening. So, in Dracula, the original, you know, Lugosi, the only one left on the boat is Renfield, right? And he's just laughing. You know, it's just that whole idea. What we're seeing here is, by having it be the plague is so much more, obviously, like it grounds it more in that reality of, like, what people are really dealing with and what they could actually, like, say, you know, well, there is a plague. This is actually happening at this time and whatever. But what we get, and this is where we tie back into Hammer, when you watch Horror Dracula is, you know, I mean, to me, the best Dracula movie kind of thing, fine. Nothing about a plague. You kind of get into the deeper ones, and eventually you're kind of like, okay, but what's Dracula's end game here? What's he trying to do? He's going after these women and whatever. But when you get to Dracula, 1972 AD, and you get to Satanic Rites of Dracula, he literally is saying, I am going to release a plague on the world and kill it. He wants to destroy the world. That is the theme of those last two movies. And John, I think it was John LeMay, came on Bots, Bugs, and Bays. We talked about this. Those are his favorites because it's like, well, because he's the right age and he watched them. But, like, they are truly so different. Those two movies are set in modern day. Well, 1972, but they're set in modern day at the time, right? They are literally modern day, and you're fighting vampires in modern day, so you're able to beat them with running water, but that's from a tap, like, you turn the faucet on and shit. Like, there's weird shit in them, but the underlying idea is that Dracula is truly a plague. He's the scourge that is going to come and wipe out the world. He's the plague. Well, that's what this movie is saying. Here he is. Nosferatu is this rotting, decaying, disgusting. He smells of death. But what is he bringing with him? All the rats. What are the rats carrying? They're carrying the bubonic plague. They're carrying the Black Death. And so since he is the embodiment of death coming to drain the life out of these people, and that's what the plague's doing. It's draining the life out of this city. It's killing people. And I love that they made sure, and I think this speaks to Robert Eggers, though, him looking more than just on the surface of things. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not just making a movie to make a movie on the surface. Like, everything's got to have layers. They're all like, it's like a parfait, like, you know, donkey would say, right? Or an onion, as Shrek would say, but it's a parfait, right? Kind of thing. You got to have layers to it. So having that idea that this is truly, it's a plague ship, it's a dead ship, it's all the town knows how to, like, people are reacting to that because that's their life. That's their reality, is that this plague is killing loved ones. It kills one but leaves another. It makes no rhyme or reason to why certain people die and why certain people don't. And now you have a situation where you now have this other evil that no one is willing to believe is real, because you weren't going to believe there's a fucking vampire. Nosferatu's not real, but it is, and it's killing people. And it's that idea lent itself really well. I think when you ground something enough in reality, this is the old wrestling thing too. When you ground something enough in reality, right? And horror movies do it as well. You can then sell people on what it is. When the machete hits the light in Friday the 13th part one, and it's solid, when you see it slammed into her skull in the next scene, you buy that it's a real machete, right? You have to ground it in something that makes it real. The plague killing people, all the deaths that are occurring, make this real. So that now, as Orloff is killing people, right, the whole time, it's the plague, you know, the fucking plague, man. It kills everybody. You know, it's like, I just thought that was a really good idea to do it that way. And just real quick, I just want to say this: the scene where he's standing and the two wolves are with him. Right? That, talk about being effective by using, by purposely using not enough light. Right? So how many scenes you see, they're just dark because they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Right? When he, the idea of the silhouettes and the shadows and all that stuff, by using that light or lack thereof to create this being that is kind of like, everything about him, you almost never see him completely. I'm watching this in 4K on a giant TV, and you really can't see him too much. But that works so well. And what it does, it makes them seem not just to be wolves, but it's more like, it's like, remember in The Omen when in the graveyard scene?
Yeah.
Right. Dogs are attacking them, and how effective that is. It makes it more effective like that. Now these wolves, which are CGI, are now going to attack him. It makes it more effective in what's there. So,
well, anyway. I was just amazed that he was able to do all the trappings. Like you were saying, there's multiple layers of things that you can read into it. Mm-hmm. Beautifully set design, you know, historically accurate set design and cinematography and stuff, and it has all those elements in it, yet he still makes it feel like the vibe of it is, like Luke said, a Hammer movie almost more than anything else, if you know that, than something you would go to see in the art house theater, you know. It felt like it. You could watch it for all the extra layers, but you could also watch it as just a grungy ass, you know. And Hammer used the trappings of art films, or like Masterpiece Theater on PBS, you know, of the costumes and the language and stuff. But at the same time, people are humping and maggots are flying and blood's pumping, and it was just I don't want to say a romp, but it was, you know, it was still just a barreling forward horror movie, barreling slowly forward, but It went by smooth as silk for me. I could have watched that. It could have been an hour longer, and I wouldn't have been checking my watch. But at the same point, he made it a monster movie, you know, and that you could watch along with all of the other stuff. And it obvious, but that's the thing, is it's still not for everyone. Like, I think a lot of the people who saw this, and like when you see the bad reviews, they usually complain either A, it's boring, B, there's too much sex in it, there's a lot of complaints about that, or C, if they're more nerdy and you know, that it didn't, the lore wasn't right for it, you know, that, you know, where were the other vampires that he turned, and, you know, stuff like that.
A vampire movie with too much sex.
But most of the people that complained about it were like, it was slow, it was, you know, and that, like, I just don't see it, you know, I don't see it, but maybe that's
I'm going to say that I like the idea of being the too much sex part of it, I think I know, well, I know what Luke's getting at here too, but the idea that there's too much sex is not that there's too much sex in the movie, in that comparatively to other vampire movies where there's like a lot of sex in them, it's because it's not sex.
It's not the kind of sex they would
want
to see.
Not the
yeah.
sex you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of rape. And
it's not sexy time. It's
no,
just,
no, right, exactly. And even when Thomas is like when she knows she's possessed, and he just takes her, and like, it's not pretty. Like, he's
no.
fucking her, and then she's laughing at him. None of this is like, so. There's a lot of people fucking in this movie, but there's not.
It's all very base.
Yeah. But it's guttural, and it's not.
Okay, I think the word you're looking for. There's no romance.
Oh no! Yeah, I know there's
dark romance or not.
There's no
vampire sensuality, right?
Yes, sensuality. Thank you. There you go. That's what I'm trying to get. There's no smooth Christopher Lee sliding up on
Frank Langella giving a girl a hickey,
pretending to climb the wall like Spider-Man. You know, kind of those things.
Now, as an aside, the scene where you know Thomas and was it Emma? Ella? I'm blanking on her name at the moment. When the scene you were just talking about, when you know she's possessed and all that, and they're doing that, and then she's laughing at him. I guarantee you, there's a subsection of guys watching this that fired certain neurons in their brains, having sex and getting laughed at immediately after. you know them because they're the guys with the Pornhub tabs open on their incognito.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
Well. I'm gonna keep my
rant about that to myself for right now. I've already gone on one tangent of Luke's hot takes for today. I'll keep mine about that whole scene to myself.
The thing is this, so like Telly wasn't home. She didn't get to watch it.
Uncut audio of that. I'm just kidding. I don't have an OnlyFans. I have a Patreon.
Do you show your booty hole on it? That's the only way you make money.
Oh my God.
Right.
Yeah. So Kelly didn't get to watch this with me, okay, because she wasn't here, right, kind of thing, right? But, like, Kelly watched The Substance with me, right? And I told her, because I watched something, I met her, you got to watch this with me. And that's a movie, she enjoyed it until the end when it got really weird and kind of gross, but she, like, that's because she doesn't like gross, icky things. But, like, I knew that if she was watching this, that those sex scenes where she would like, Kelly loves True Blood. And, that, again, if you watch True Blood or the whole thing, there's a lot of sex in that, too, right? But that's all like sexy sex. Even like the stuff that's like, you know, the killing that happens, it's not like, even when they're drinking blood, whatever, it's all super slick and sexy and whatever. This is not that. And I thought she would not appreciate that part. I thought she would love it for the fact that it's like the costumes and the time period, because she's a big history kind of person, right? But that's what I'm saying, is I'm looking at this going, this is not like, Even Werner Herzog's Nosferatu is
very much a romance.
Romance, and it's all dreamy and everything's soft, and there's nothing soft here. Like, there's nothing like dreamlike. There's nightmares. There's horrific. And I think you have to go that way. I think that's one of the things that that you can see is a very conscious decision that Eggers makes. You have to make this nightmarish. You have to make this much more 30 Days a Night than Twilight. You have to make this harsh. You have to, because it's not pleasant. This shouldn't be, you're going, oh my God, look how sexy Orlov. He's not. He's disgusting as shit. Like, that's the whole point. He's rotting and filthy and he's death. You shouldn't root for him.
Yeah, and what just popped into my head with you talking about that? It's closer to the John Carpenter's vampires than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, except no one's doing it for pay. You know, kind of thing. Oh, could you imagine James Wood is doing this? Hey, what are you guys doing? What's going on in here, huh?
He could have pulled off the Van Helsing role.
Well, except that he can't do an English accent. So it just sounds like some guy. Yeah, what are you guys talking about? You know, here.
I don't care. Just let do it as James Woods. It's like, how you doing, James Woods? Nice to meet you. How you doing, James Woods? Hey, we're gonna kill a vampire. That's right. We're gonna fuck this guy up. We're gonna fuck him up. That's what we're gonna do. That's right.
Vampires is one of those. I don't know if you guys have read the book. I read the original novel for vampires, I think too, which gets much more into them being like literally just doing it as like a business. But like that's true. It's not sexy. It's a perfect example. That's not sexy. It's not, you know, whatever. It's this kind of. It's even getting more into I Am Legend, the book I Am Legend. Yeah. By Richard Matheson. It's not pleasant. The women taunt him and whatever because they're trying to lure him out. It's not that they want to have a relationship. They want to kill him. That's all it is. It's just this base need to feed the blood what they're looking for.
And like in the Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Coppola Dracula, and a lot of Draculas, you see, you know, Harker goes there and sees this degraded Dracula. But once he starts getting some blood in him, then he starts becoming dashing Dracula. This guy was never going to be dashing ever again. There were maggots working on him.
This was not 32-year-old Gary Oldman with the round glasses and the long hair. Nope.
Yeah, no, and he wasn't going to be. He just likes to drink blood and rot, basically. Yeah. And
so, you know, and that's one of the things, too, is that by having, I mean, it's Billy Skarsgård is Nosferatu.
Yeah.
He is also, he's Pennywise, and he's like, if you look right in the eye area, you could kind of tell a little bit it's him because you know it's him, but you can't see him. Like, if you showed me a picture of Pennywise and this, you wouldn't be able to tell that it's a person. So,
not at all.
And I mean, the thing is, and he's the crow in the new Crow movie, which is poor.
Better left unsaid. Yeah.
Say anything, right? But you can see it there. Like, he's able to emote through that makeup. He's able to he's able to do that work that is so hard for people to do. Like he gets his character. I mean, again, I know there's lines he's speaking, he's just whatever, but even as Pennywise, you're able to feel him coming through his performances, coming through the makeup, much like Tim Curry did in the original It.
Yeah.
I mean, Curry's just phenomenal, everything he does, but there's only so many people who can do that. So sometimes people get
one of them's Gary Oldman.
Right. That's what I'm saying is, but Gary Oldman was able to do that because in the movie, except when he is like when he's got the gray suit on, he's got a ton of makeup on in every fucking scene, So he's able to do it too. But that's what I'm saying is, by getting that kind of actor, it is different in the way they look. But you got actors who can emote through the makeup, and you know, have you feel as if through what it is. So you're not just bogged down in like, well, that's a rubber mask on that guy's face, or I can see the seam. He's got, his fangs are too big, you know. I mean, that's the other thing too. We mentioned before about the whole thing about the fangs, you know. Lugosi never wore fangs ever. He doesn't wear them in the scenes. He's just talking kind of thing, right? But the whole idea is having the fangs. There's the very sexy vampire fangs that are there, And then there's the beast, like, tearing you apart, like actual fangs that are ripping and tearing and, you know, at you, kind of like which you get much more in a Salem's Lot. You get much more in 30 Days a Night. You get even in Nosferatu and stuff. It's the idea that those teeth are there and they're bigger and they're more gnarly looking than you would get in these kind of slick, you know, like, you know, big, you know, sneak in and out kind of thing, you know, but like retractable. So,
yeah.
Sorry, excuse me. Had a hairball there. So, but
I mean, you got to go into this movie with the right mindset, I think, right? You know, because this is it's weird because, you know, Hero, you had put some stuff on the group chat about how the film is shot and it looks like a dream and all that, and all good stuff, and I agree. But what's odd about this movie is that it does something that is very common in modern filmmaking that normally turns me off, but it does it in such a way that it helps visually. And that's like the yellow filter on everything. Most modern movies have this yellow orange sort of tint to them, and it drives me insane because it's unnatural. And I just made my own point. That's why I like it. Everything has this unnatural, unhealthy sort of look to it. When they're in, when Thomas is out with Orlok, it does look like reality, and it shouldn't, because it's a fucked up world where they're in, right? They're at his castle and stuff, and then when by the time he comes back, everything has this pallid shade to it.
It's totally everyone's skin desaturated.
But in this case, it works.
It sets it more towards black and white, and it feels like it should be black and white.
That's
but
what
it's
I
not,
said
it's,
to Maureen. I was like, why didn't he just go for broke and just do this in black and white? Because you're already 90% of the way there.
There's like the scene with the torches, and then there's the scene at the very end where he's getting the... he's getting the dose of sunlight, and you see him, and you can see flesh tone on him for the first time. Yep. And it all of a sudden just strips away all the, like, horrifying nature of him, and he just looks like, you know, because he's just about, you know, a hair away from death. So,
it
but that's
pathetic,
what's funny.
Right?
He's been pale all the way through the movie, and then just before death, the sun hits him, and you can see his skin tone. It's the most alive he's ever looked, and he looks like shit. And then he dies.
Well, that's kind of in the
Hearst. He looks like a withered old man. You know, he doesn't turn to dust. He just looks like somebody's, you know, great grandfather.
Well, that was kind of in the Herzog version too, and I remember watching that in college. And Orlok only becomes even remotely human when he's next to her. Like, and it might be a flub in the movie, but his reflection is in her mirror, but that's because he's right there with her. Like, he's actually kind of alive by being with her. So, I mean, that's just something I noticed, but...
I also like this movie because they never really did a mirror gag on it, but there were still a lot of mirrors and shots where you're seeing a mirror reflection that just sort of remind you that, like, oh, you can't see him in the mirror, but they never do the thing where, you know, that you see a shot in the mirror and then you see behind him and he's standing right behind them, or he's, you know, or they notice that the cigar is just floating in the air or whatever. It's, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I said, I'm always, you know, guys know me. I'm usually bearish when it comes to modern horror movies, right? I don't buy into them very often, right? So I try to temper it and, you know, go in with an open mind, right? And try not to prejudge. And this one it's typical Nosferatu. It takes its time, but once it gets rolling, holy crap! Once this thing, it's like Greg the Hammer Valentine is a horror. Once it gets, you know, goes for a few minutes, it gets warmed up. It is a banger all the way through here. And Greg the Hammer Valentine looks like every female PE teacher that every one of us ever had growing up.
I'm sure you've seen the meme of him and Brutus sitting down together, and it says the two of them look like old lesbians now.
Yeah, now, forget that. Like, they looked like a duck then, too. But
maybe.
So, I mean, that's the thing. But I will say that the thing about this, I do like, again, that it... I said kind of the same stuff with The Substance, that it's a modern mainstream horror film that's not shying away from being gruesome because it serves the story.
Yeah. Right?
In a much different sense than The Substance did. The Substance being a body horror type of film, it made sense in that context. This being a vampire film, but again, Hollywood likes their sexy vampires. They like their, the classy, charming gentleman, right? The gentleman rapist type of vampire. Whereas this guy's a monster. So it is a legit monster movie. And it leans into that. Now, like Jay, you had said this, this is going to be a hard sell for mainstream audiences because of that, right? Mm-hmm. Even calling it, Nosferatu, and most, I don't know how well, I think most people, mainstream non-horror fans may recognize the Max Schreck Orlok and say, oh, that's that old-timey vampire. They don't necessarily know or have seen Nosferatu,
vampire, right? They think of the Nosferatu as being from the What We Do in the Shadows movie.
The Shadows or like Salem's Lot. It's like, that's a guy
maybe,
from Salem's Lot.
Maybe even Salem's Lot, but that was 40 years ago, too.
Well, the new Salem's Lot.
I agree.
Oh, that's right. But, there was a new Salem's Lot. That's right.
Yeah. So... I agree. It'd be a hard sell, but for if you're listening to this show, I'm generally assuming that you're a horror fan or at least somewhat of a horror fan. So I think and we've covered things obviously way more gruesome than this. So I don't think that's a turnoff. But it's like give it a little bit, give it a few scenes to get itself going, and you'll be presently rewarded with this.
Yeah. The other, and Luke's made a really good point here. So, again, the idea of giving it, it's giving it a chance to go in, but you can't go in totally expecting, action and balls to the wall stuff. Like, but the thing is, if you've never seen a Robert Eggers movie, like, that all his movies are like that. You cannot go into his movies expecting it to be action, and that it's not going to be Fast and the Furious. It's not going to be Jurassic World. It's not going to be that.
Well, that's the thing is there is going to be action. It ain't just, action you're used to.
No. What I'm saying is, but it's not that. Like you go into those movies, they have a hot open and a whatever. And,
right.
And this movie opens like with a lot of information, like, the movie opens with her giving herself over and inviting this evil into her life. That's super important. The first 5 minutes of this movie sets everything up. So if you're getting your popcorn, not paying attention, dicking around your phone, you miss that. You're like, wait, how's this happen to this lady? Like, well, they fucking told you. Where were you?
Don't be a dick on your phone, man.
Yeah. Oh,
man. But as soon as you said that, now I want to see go ahead.
I was just saying the way I gauge
all
whether
I say is Jay, you saying it's not Fast and Furious, now I want to see Justin Lin
Justin Lin's Nosferatu nose for Fast 2.
Yeah, I'd love to see Justin Lin's Nosferatu would be fucking awesome. I would love to see that.
But that's the thing, is that's how I gauge whether the movie is good or not. Like, I mean, like for Can I keep Kelly's attention from her phone while we're watching it? If the answer is yes, then I know this movie has got something to it for a mainstream audience. Because if it can keep her from looking at her phone for an hour and a half, 2 hours, like I'm not kidding, The Substance, she watched it the whole way through. She didn't look at her phone the whole time. I told her put her phone down, but I was like, you gotta watch. And she's like, all right, I'll watch. And she watched it. But that's what I'm saying, is that's one of the gauges, and I know it seems weird, but it's true, is that if you're trying to get someone to watch something that might not be exact, like, this isn't Downton Abbey, this isn't whatever the fuck horse shit she watches, right, kind of thing, this isn't even Yellowstone, right, so she watches that kind of stuff, but even then, she watches it half on her phone, right, Well, it's true, right? She watches half it while playing on her phone. If I can get her to put it
in. Whatever horseshit. That's what I'm talking about. The fuck knows. I mean, what did Eddie Izzard always say? It's like, of course Star Wars is British. It's just people opening doors, right? That's all you get in British movies. People opening doors. Oh, sir, the rebels have come. Oh, do they want tea? I don't think so. They brought a flag. And you know what that means when you bring a flag.
Oh, my God. Oh, sorry. Anyway, you guys know how it is. It's just, you know. Hey, it's always an uphill battle. So, but yeah, it's if you tend to like, you know, this kind of like, you know, movie, and you're willing to put the time and effort in, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
If you're a Robert Eggers fan, you're fine.
This is my first experience of him, and after watching this, Mario was like, who directed that? And I said, this guy named Robert Eggers. I haven't seen any of his other stuff. I will be going back to watch everything he's done.
Oh, yeah. Go watch the Witch next before you watch The Lighthouse. The Lighthouse is a riot, but it's that's the hardcore Eggers.
Okay. I like hardcore Eggs.
The going full out weird and disturbing.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Honestly, the Witch is... You know, I mean, I'm trying to remember. That came out after. I thought we were that was one of the movies we were talking about.
It's a slow. I think we did The Witch. It's a slower burn.
We didn't do.
We didn't do The Witch.
No, we didn't do. Oh, no. Yeah, obviously, because Hero would have seen it if we.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a very slow burn. That's the thing, is that movie's designed, but it's designed to be that way. But like the Northman. Is probably the, I don't know how to say this, it's probably the one that's, it's, you know, I mean, obviously not can't count it, Nosferatu. The one
that's got most... Vikings sacking villages and stuff.
Okay.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's the only one of his movies I haven't seen, and I'm looking forward to it.
Northman? You haven't seen that one? Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I've seen scenes from it, and it looks great.
Northman.
He came from the north to fight Eastman.
I've seen Eastman. I saw that one where he battled amazing.
Rondo! There's no pup wrangling in this movie.
Excuse me, film illusion and magical. Magic in this film should be handled by the amazing Rondo. But anyway, yeah, so, I mean, that's, you know, that's all I can say. It's like, it's on, so if you want to watch Nosferatu, so if you have Peacock, it is now free streaming on Peacock. It bills itself as the extended version. I'm not sure exactly what it is extended.
Oh,
I read up on that. It's four extra minutes.
4 minutes. Okay. Yeah. 4 minutes. Yeah, I've only watched the extended cut because I watched it on the 4K. But yeah, it's 4 minutes. I'm not sure what those 4 minutes they are, but they're just 4 minutes.
I saw it's just little, it's like some scenes are a little longer with the dialogue. She talks about her dream a little longer in this one. It was like Robert Eggers said, it wasn't as much like a director's cut as him just like, After releasing it, you know, watching it, going like, "Ah, I probably should have left those little parts," and then they flesh it out a little bit more. But it doesn't. It's not like any self-contained new scenes or anything like that. It's subtle and doesn't really affect the overall thing.
All right,
yeah, but go check it out. You know, it's not going to say it's a romp, but it is well worth the watch for horror and vampire fans, I would say.
Yep.
I mean, even if you weren't really into it, it's still interesting enough as even just like a base history lesson on what it generally was like during those times. to keep you from being just like, this sucks, you know. Although that hasn't stopped a lot of people. There was one guy who was just like, I decided I was going to finish my popcorn, and then I was out of there.
Jackass.
Which, eating popcorn through this movie is kind
of... Now I just have this image of...
Not a popcorn muncher.
No, but I have this image of you, Chris, sitting there with the bucket of popcorn, using the bucket from the monkey, right? Just sitting there with a stupid grin on your face. Eating monkey popcorn, watching Orlok, you know, rip people apart.
What I would do is I would go into the aisle, throw the popcorn on the floor, and just fucking hump over it while I go. Thrusting my loins. That's what I would do.
This movie
canola oil makes a good lubricant, so.
Yeah. Well, they actually had one of those popcorn tins, you know, like the they had one for this. It's the sarcophagus. It's one of the hardest ones to get because people went apeshit for it because it's so cool. And unlike the other ones, this one you could actually take the lid off of and actually eat the popcorn out of.
It would only be truly for this movie if you opened it up and there were maggots on your popcorn.
Well, you know, so.
I don't like maggoty popcorn, but.
That's some marketing there, though. Let me tell you.
I do like Nosferatu.
That would make the news. Yeah. That'd get some publicity.
That'll put butts in seats. Mm. It'd be funny if it was like just mixed together with what do you call? It's all like sour, you know, sour gummy worms or whatever mixed in.
Yeah.
Sweet and savory.
Kind of like Hero, right? Sweet and savory.
Yeah. I am getting saltier in my old age, so.
I was gonna say, Hero, you're like that gum that Violet chews, right? You're the whole fucking meal, right, man?
I've toned down a little bit in my older age too, just getting grumpier. Yeah, my whole philosophy growing up used to be, yeah, my attitude's gonna be like throwing a brick through your fucking window. You're either gonna laugh at it and go along with it, or you're gonna tell me to fuck off. That's changed.
Yeah, so. I was more referring, you know, frankly, to your sexual prowess, right? Because you were the hot soup, you were the main course, and you were fucking dessert, right? So it's right there.
Three course, baby.
Yeah, and you kind of look like a blueberry, so you got that.
I have a very sexy learning disability. I call it sexlexia.
We shall retire to my boudoir, or as I call it, the love-nasia.
I mean, I call it the boneyard, but whatever.
Boneyard.
Oh god, this whole thing took a turn.
Yeah. All right, on that note, what the fucking movie?
Yep.
This took a turn.
Well, we'll be back to the VHS after this, anyway.
Are you talking about more of my movies?
Oh.
Well, all I'm saying is I'm waiting for the Pornhub parody of this. It'll be the lowest watched porn movie on Pornhub.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, is the Triple Exorcist good? Maybe that like that level of like or whatever. Because there's always
I call myself
Triple Exorcist.
The Triple Exorcist.
At least they could play. They could play the Linda Blair. You know, find an actress that looks like Linda Blair. People like that shit. It's like this where they're like, let's play up the plague aspect of this.
Yeah, it's a bridge too far for me, man.
But is it a bridge too far for the internet? That's what I'm.
No, and that's the fucking problem.
Asking questions over here.
No.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Test, test, say duh.
Duh.
Good luck.